Okay, so we are in time, so we can welcome Felipe and on his talk. And please, if you still see some space next to each other, try to move to the middle so more people can come in.
So, welcome. I'm going to talk today about our favorite topic, which is AI and LLMs and Gen AI. And, excuse me? Speak up?
Okay. Hello, hello, hello.
Okay, now it's better. You hear me all right in the back? Doesn't saturate better like that. Okay. So I'm going to talk about our favorite topic, which is AI and Gen AI, that we all love to hate. Me in particular. Actually, I'm not so much of a ludic, but I have a no AI badge in the back of my laptop. None of this was generated with AI, by the way. So, Philippe Onredan, I'm the lead of an open source project. It's actually now a small foundation called Abort Code. And everything we do is free and open source code, data, and standard to help people use more open source. So figuring out where the code comes from, what's the license, are there security issues, and making sure we can all benefit from that. I dabbled a bit in standards. I'm a co-founder of something called SPDX for SBOMs. And I'm also a core contributor to CycloneDX because standards, you know, you need more of them so you can pick which one to support. I'm also behind a small standard called PackageURL, which happened to be, since mid-December, a ECMA standard and on the way to ISO, which is a very stupid string to identify package in SBOM and SCA tools and vulnerability database. You will hear about that if you don't. Who has ever heard about Perl or PackageURL in the room? Good. So it's pretty cool. You will have to suffer through that, whether you like it or not, if you're doing somehow application security at some level. So we're building tools, data, standards. Everything is free as open source. That's important. Our agenda today, of course, AI is eating the world. That's a serious issue. And how can we make sure we reuse AI responsibly? And there's two core issues that I will bring up. One is an issue of license. Because if you think about open source is defined by license. Code that's generated by a bot, the jury is not out yet, but is eventually non-copyrightable. So there's no open source anymore. There's also the related problem, which is LLMs are massively trained on our open source code, the code we write. And they can really regurgitate, spit back this code very efficiently because they memorize it, which brings not only copyright issue, but also security issue, you know. Bug in, garbage out. So you have a wonderful way to eventually propagate security bugs from the training code to the code that's being generated. So, who has not heard about AI and LLM? Ah! So somebody was living in a cave for the last 3 years. Wonderful. That's great. That's a rare thing. We need to put you on a pedestal. Because you will save humanity eventually. You're the last one of us that has not suffered through the thing. Okay. We were talking about the risk of AI-generated code. And also another topic, which is eventually AI is used as a feature in code. It's not so much not only generated code, but also using an LLM, a chat feature, or whatever, especially in the world of cybersecurity, it has really, really funky outcomes. And eventually, having the ability to identify when code is AI generated is really important. Whatever I'm going to show you today, and I'll do a short demonstration, it's a lie. I'm not able to detect AI generated code. There's no EM dash in code to spot AI generated code. What I can instead do is detect strikingly a code which is strikingly similar to your open source code that was used to feed the beast. And that's what we're focusing on, at least part of what I'm talking about. Now, you can at least do funny stuff. And even useful stuff in AI. One of them is to generate poems. That is actually AI generated, which would describe how you would do AI generated code detection. I'll make sure I'll put the link to the slides in my talk. I didn't do it yet, but you have the full downloadable LibreOffice file and PDF. I'll make sure it's soon on FOSDEM. So there's another problem is there's a lot of open washing in the space. You know, OpenAI is not open. And most of open space AI is not open source itself. There is also a lot of open source, which is essentially central, without which any kind of AI would not be happening. TensorFlow, PyTorch are some of them. The good thing, at least for now, is that the code that's AI generated very often doesn't compile yet. So it's a good thing in the sense that it's an easy way to spot. If it doesn't compile, it doesn't pass the test, there's a good chance it's AI generated. We have, as I said, not only a problem of open washing, company like OpenAI, but another problem, which is a lot of innovation, and I don't like this kind of innovation about licensing. We have a lot of new, what I call open source or open washing licenses, which look like open source but are not. And that's a threat, not so much on security, but on open source at large. Because it's very easy to get fooled if you're not really savvy about spotting these. And sometimes they take an MIT, a BSD, or an Apache license and insert a few things. We are seeing at least one or two new licenses a week, which are funky, non-open source licenses. They all come from AI projects or AI-related projects. Case in point, for instance, if you're dabbling with a source available or a downloadable model from Meta, Llama 4, good luck for you. You're based in Europe. You cannot touch. The license explicit says you cannot use this model if you're based in Europe. That's wonderful. What can go wrong with that? So I think that we have to treat AI and accept sometimes it's a wonderful productivity booster. Sometimes it even compiles and runs. It's rare, but that can help. But again, we need to ensure we understand what we're dealing with. If you imagine taking all the code from the GNU project under the GPL and create a small language model of that. I'm not a lawyer, but I cannot imagine a way where the output of generating code from that model would not be also under the GPL, just derive in a weird, funky way with weight and math behind it, but it's still eventually directly derived from that. There's also interesting that in some case, and I think it's probably going too far, you have corporations which are prohibiting AI-generated code or prohibiting AI use. You also have stupid corporations, and maybe some of you have been subjected to this abuse, where you have managers that ask you every other day, Have you been using more AI? Which AI have you been using? Why are you not using more AI? Which I think is absolutely terrible as a metric for performance. I hope, how many of you are subject to this kind of abuse in your corporation or business? Oh man, more than people that know Perl. That's terrible. Oh. We're living really in a weird world. So, the AI generated search project. The test base is a small between quote training data where we've indexed about 260,000 open source project source code. And what we did is to ask ChatGPT to generate code similar to a package URL. So essentially generate code similar to this package. It's probably not a prompt that you would use in real life, but it's a possible prompt. And we saved each file in a code file. And then we use our tool, the tool we built for that, to scan these files, these 100 files, on the most common JavaScript project, and basically run the code matching between our index of 260,000 and these 100 generated files. What we found is It's not scientific, at least 20% of the case, strikingly similar code. So that's how the setup looks like. A lot of machinery, but everything is open source. The whole point is you essentially collect checksums for your index, and you match them back. Except the checksums are not really checksums. That would be too brittle. We wouldn't find anything. In particular, when you generate code, with depending on the parameter called the model temperature, you will have essentially the same control flow, completely different name for the variables, the functions, and else. So you need to adjust to these kind of things. And initial approach was to say, let's use AI to detect if there are similarities with code that exists in the AI-generated code. It worked actually okay, except it was extremely expensive. I just spent all my free token budget with all the AI company there. The focus of this project is to say, let's find strikingly similar code fragments that may come from an open source project. The problem is it doesn't work well with traditional techniques. If you think about just an inverted index, there's too much content, too much details to get in. You get too much noise very quickly. We didn't try also the approach, but we researched it extensively, which is used in a search engine called Bing from Microsoft. It's a project called Bitfunnel, which is an alternative to inverted indices, which is interesting and probably something you want to consider in the future. And you have a few companies in the space which are doing what I call traditional code fragment matching companies, commercial companies like Black Duck, semi-commercial company like ScanOSS, a proprietary company like Fossa or FossID. They all use the exact same algorithm, which was devised by a guy in Berkeley in the late 90s, early 2000. And it doesn't really work well, because it's not able to detect the wide variations we have when we use AI. You can prompt twice the same model with the same prompt. You will get eventually slightly different results. So that's the problem. So the approach is going two ways. First, we break the code into chunks. That means literally we parse the code in tokens, and we detect boundaries using a content-defined algorithm to have chunks which are roughly of the same size. And then we compute what's called a fuzzy hash. Some of you may be aware of things like SSDeep, which is a tool to find approximate matching files widely used in security. We're not using SSDeep, but the principles are similar, meaning you abstract a code fragment to a bit string, and you have a way to match approximately the Hamming distance in Hamming distance if two code fragments are the same. The thing in our case, is what's interesting is that the precision of the matching can be tuned at query time, depending on how large the bit strings you want to be. The best way to understand how this works is this. Imagine two cats, pictures, a brown and a gray. They have a slightly different tail, different eyes. If you resize the image down to, say, 32 bits by 32 bits, they look exactly the same. That's essentially what we are doing here, using another approach, but it's sizing down cat pictures, which is always, of course, a security favorite. So the initial project plan was to go through each of these steps. I won't bug you with that. But again, this didn't work well. We were not able to detect a lot of the code because of these variations in temperature. That's one problem. And, you know, good stuff die hard. We found an algorithm devised by a guy which happened to be the author of a venerable version control system called CVS, which predates, which was based on RCS, which then led to subversions and eventually to Git, with a few segues in Bazaar and other version control system. And I think the guy, I don't know if he's dead or not, but He's retired. At the minimum, he is retired, working in a Dutch university. And he wrote a piece of code to actually transform a stream of code tokens in something that generic and makes sense. It's simple, obvious, it's time-tested. It's like, almost 40 years. And we call that code stemming because that looks cool. But the essence is to the same way you stem language when you index it in for information retrieval, where two words which share the same start will be just abstracted to that start. Here we're doing the same with code. We have another problem, which I won't dive into too much, which is how do you distribute eventually the fingerprints widely so we don't create this massive centralized database, which is lock-in mechanism. We have something called federated code to help with that we're progressively deploying, which means that eventually you have access to this to run on-prem without having any of us in the picture. It's important to liberate the data. So current status, we have something which works. It's based on boring technology. I love boring. It's proven. There's nothing funky. We use old code. We resist when we have pull requests of new beasts that says, hey, you know, why don't you use these new tools, this new thing? No. We use boring, working things. And we made sure we could also extract low-level libraries that could be reused for other purposes at the same time. So before going there, I'm going to go and do the mandatory live demo, which for sure will not work because we're live. And if I can find... Scheiße. I see there's a few Germans in the room, right? Normally you're supposed to use French to swear. But here I'm using Germans because that's less recognizable. Okay. I'm just going to go there. We'll find it one way or the other. That's a test instance. And I'm going to search for a test project. I'm sure we're going to have one. So this is the tool we use at the front end called Scancode.io. You can just look for it, download and run. It can scan code for origin, like AI-generated code, but also a lot of things. Scan containers, do vulnerability lookups, a lot of other stuff. But match-to-match code. There we go. And OK, this looks like a good, decent project. So what we did here is scan for some code that was AI generated. If I recall correctly, the prompt was generate some code similar to this JavaScript library that does base64 encoding. We run these three pipelines in sequence. What's interesting to see the results here, there was one package that was detected, which is eventually the project that we asked to generate code for. So it sounds a bit as a tautology, but interesting thing, ask for prompt an LLM to generate code about a certain package, you'll get it out. And if we dive a bit into this, we see three matched resources. And if we do dive into one of them, and see a code viewer here, we can see the match fragments that are essentially the same as our scene upstream. And you could dive into the details. You would be looking, you see some sections which are not highlighted. It's just a side effect of the algorithm. But you look at this code, it says, yes, there's no question that this has been obviously derived from this upstream project. And except for a few non-match regions, it's actually the same code. And again, this is literally exactly verbatim the code with a few tiny modifications. So that's the proof that we're not bullshitting there. So you don't have to trust me. Next up, the key things also is being able to detect the case where you have code that's used as a feature AI user feature. So that's what we're working on next. Together with helping people that build LLM using code. In particular, there's a project at Hugging Face, which they call Big Code, and they're building a data set called the Stack. They're eventually, we're helping them to run our tool scan code at scale to ensure that the provenance and license of the code they index is actually known, which is a good thing because at least you can trace when you have potentially generated code from their models, where this came from accurately. The next frontier is really to treat models as software components. Meaning, there's some companies that probably don't want to use Chinese models. It's the case in Germany, where I think it's been prohibited by the German government in some case. I think DeepSeek has been prohibited. It's the case in some US corporation doing business with the US federal government. I don't care about the reason. I think, frankly, it's overblown and bullshit. But in any case, it's interesting from a technical point of view to say, can we detect when a model is based on DeepSeek and have been fine-tuned, for instance, on DeepSeek? And it turns out from the early things we've been looking at that if you treat the sequence of weight in a model as a subject of fingerprinting, we can actually find strikingly similarities between the model and its fine-tuned versions. In many cases, so when you have quantization, it's harder, it doesn't work, but when you don't quantize, you have essentially a few number of the weights which are being updated at each generation of fine-tuning, and the rest is actually the same, and we find these very efficiently. The last point is to detect when you have AI used using APIs and libraries. It's a bit easier. We already have the code to detect code similarities, to detect libraries. It's going to be just about tagging them. So you have LangChain, well-known library in Python, for instance. You want to make sure that you know that you're using LangChain, which means it's like you're using AI feature in your code. And API endpoints, something that's likely as simple as just doing a grep on URL. And that's it. This was funded in part by an EU program called NGI Search. So if you're based in the EU, in part thanks to your taxes. Thank you very much. The code is yours. It's not ours. It's for you to use. And if you have questions, I'm taking some questions there. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. So I have a question about transform somehow. Do you use the actual representation, textual representation of source code, or you transform into intermediate representation, like a kind of abstract syntax tree, and then analyze this tree to find matches and flow of the code and not exact words and constructions used?
So the question is, do we use some kind of intermediate representation of the code when we process it? So the answer is yes and no. We transform the code, we parse it with a library from GitHub called Traceer. And we basically have streams of tokens that we then genericize with this algorithm from DeepGrino. So it's really more of a syntactic-based approach. We don't deal with abstract syntax trees, control flow, and all that. In that sense, it's a bit dumb. But it works very well. The problem is at scale, doing anything that deals with abstract syntax tree. There's a guy here working also with About Code project, Prabhu, raise your hand, which does incredibly sophisticated static analysis to find actually reachable, vulnerable code. That's very expensive in terms of compute. Here we're trying really to have massive matching and we need to be able to churn out these very fast. So we're doing some compromise, but in practice it works pretty fine. Another last question?
No, we are out of the time.
Okay, so we're out. Thank you very much.